Hello and welcome to another episode of Box Trick. I am your host, Matt, known on the internet as Super Gainsbroys. Gainsbroys? What is that? Gainsbros. Gainsbros. Just messing it up here, but that's okay. Joined by the Age of Retro. Kyle, how are we doing today, man?
We're doing well. We're doing swell. Age of Retro, not Sage of Retro. Or
Age of Retro. The Sage. There, that would be like a, that's like a sequel.
Ooh, there we go.
Stages of, you know.
Yeah.
My new name. The Lost Sages or something like that.
The Sage of Retro.
The Sage of Retro. Yeah. So we're going to be diving into Game Boy.
Very
Game
excited.
Boy games, man. Ah, so nostalgic for this. We did NES last time. We're going to have to go back to NES because
we do.
There's just way too many games. We're like, I don't know. There might be like 40 games we have to talk about.
Right.
That's just like scratching the surface.
I know. We just had a random pick last time and it was great.
It was great.
I could go so deep though.
Yeah, we're gonna have to go back. I mean, all of them we're gonna have to go back because you know there's just too many games at the end of the day. And we'll start there. We'll start with some new games. I think we both picked up which is the correct way to do it, by the way, the Switch 1 version of Final Fantasy Tactics to play on your Switch 2 because Square is actually really good with these free updates. I popped in my Switch 1 version of Dragon Quest 3, the HD remake, right. And it got a free upgrade. Same with Final Fantasy Tactics. So if you do want to get the physical version and you don't want to go the game key card, so the Switch 2 version of Final Fantasy Tactics is a game key card. There, you can buy the Switch 1 version and get a free update. So you do still have it physically. It's way to go.
So you can get those 32-bit graphics on the PlayStation if you went that route. Because right. I do like that there's both modes. I do love the fact that they included the original game in there.
Yeah, it's great. And the remaster. So there are some differences, and I was watching somebody explain it, and I just went with the new version. I just dove in.
I did too.
I didn't really think about anything. But from my understanding, the classic version is the PS1 version, and the remastered version is even slightly more different than the PSP version. Am I correct in
that? Yeah, it's new voiceover. They voice over everything. I noticed I was skipping a lot because I'm reading faster and then they're talking. But I guess they mess with the controls a little bit too. So I think it is more like the PS1 version.
Yeah, so I think the PSP version is kind of left out a little bit. I know in the PSP version, War of the Lions, so they added new cutscenes, and they balanced a lot because the PS1 version is kind of brutal.
It is.
It is. And I mean, it's a slog to get through just because of like how long everything takes. I mean, you'll be like on a battle, and if you lose, you have to do the whole battle all over again.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic game, fantastic story. A lot of people typically have Final Fantasy Tactics ranked as like in their top five.
Top five, yeah.
Like of all Final Fantasy games.
It's such a good game. It does get repetitive a little bit. You do a lot of the same thing over and over again, but it's a great story. You should not pass on the story. It's great.
Yeah, no, it's phenomenal. You can get Cloud, and I guess they changed that a little bit to make it easier or something in this version. I haven't played it, but just from what I saw with it, because I didn't really want to, like, I mean, it's Final Fantasy Tactics. I'm like, I played this game, you know, a couple times before, had a great time. I still have my original PS1 copy, and I was like, okay, well, I'll just dive in and see it. And so just from what I saw, and I'm not as familiar with the PSP version, but like getting out of the maps is easier. Like there's a lot of additions here. I mean, I don't necessarily want to call it like a remake because it's not like a remake.
Quality of life improvement,
but it's a lot more quality life improvements than you get in some just remasters.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
Very, very beautiful though. I only did a little bit because I wanted to finish Bonanza, which I did. Yeah. Very, very well done.
Very well done. They dropped some DLC for that, I think, or something.
They did. I did not. So my biggest fear going into Bonanza was I don't know if I'm going to play it on in the end game like I did Odyssey. Because I remember just getting everything in that game. And I kind of fell off. Once I beat it, I'm like, oh, there's a lot more to do. But I need to do something else right now.
Yeah.
There's a bit platform fatigue going on. after you beat that game.
I still need to dive back into it. I've been a little busy lately with like I was telling you about before, but beforehand, like my wife's work's going on strike and we work at the same place, and there's a lot of life stuff as we get towards the end of the holidays. The Portland Retro Gaming Expo is this weekend, and I've been getting
nice
geared up for that. I want to do some N64 shopping and talk to some other people and see if maybe we can bring some more people on the podcast, some other content creators and stuff. It could be fun. But Final Fantasy Tactics, I'm still really just enjoying Cyberpunk, and it's great because I can play on my Mac, I can play on my Switch, or I can play on my you know, it's like you have the Steam Deck, you can kind of do that as well. But still I'm almost done with Cyberpunk though. I did a lot of the side stuff, and now I'm like ready to just dive into the rest, into the final little bits of the story. So move on to that. Hades 2 is out. I've played it a little bit. I'm not nearly as into it as I thought I would be, but I burnt out myself on Hades 1. Right. And football's on, so I've been playing Madden on the Switch.
About them Patriots.
Hey. Yeah. You know, it's funny. Somebody shared a screenshot of the top of the AFC right now. They're like, is this 2007? Because it's like Colts,
yep,
Patriots, Steelers, and Chargers. What is going on? We're back. Yep. We're back to 2007. I think the economy is back to 2007. We were talking about that just before we started. Like, I think we're just waiting for it to implode too while we're at it. There was some other game I wanted to talk about. Oh yeah, Pokemon Legends is coming out. God, Hyrule the Warriors. Oh, Super Mario Galaxy.
We nailed
1 and 2.
We nailed it.
We did.
We said Galaxy 1 and 2. I didn't expect the movie.
I didn't know it was going to be a Super Mario Galaxy movie.
Right.
And we knew the movie was coming, the sequel to the movie. I didn't know they would bundle Galaxy 1 and 2 together, because they already had Galaxy bundled with the 3D All-Stars.
Yeah.
So I wasn't expecting that. I just thought literally it was just going to be Galaxy 2. So, but I think that's a great purchase. And I watched some breakdowns, and some people said that there must be like a Switch 2 update, because it's not a Switch 2 game, it is a Switch 1 game.
I didn't notice an update. I noticed the update when I put the game in, as always,
but it
I
don't must know be if some sort of
Switch 2.
Well, I watched like Switch Up and some of these other Switch content that break down like Digital Foundry and stuff. And they broke it down and said that there is a difference of playing it on Switch 1 and Switch 2. So there must have just been an update. So if it knows, obviously, if you're playing on Switch 2. But some other people were saying that even if you're playing Galaxy 1, there is some sort of refinement, like small little fidelity refinements between the 3D All-Stars and this version of Galaxy.
Interesting. I didn't even try 1. I just jumped right in the 2.
Yeah. I'll tell you a true story. Galaxy 2 I've like never really played.
So much better.
Well, I need to, because Galaxy 1, I mean, I enjoyed it. I think it's a fantastic, I think it's probably the best 3D Mario game. I struggle with it though, because it gives me a little motion sickness. You're like running around these planets. I'm in the motion sickness crowd of Galaxy 1.
You know what I realized that kind of annoys me in that game is the little cursor, the star cursor, constantly on the screen. Because you used to like use your Wiimote and point at things and shoot,
right,
or collect. But I kind of find it annoying now.
Yeah. So when you dove into Galaxy, were you using the Joy-Cons or were you playing it with?
I was playing on the screen.
Controller.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was doing the handheld mode.
Handheld. Okay. So you were using it. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, hey, we are going to talk about, actually, I think we had a comment here. And I want to see if I can get that pulled up, just so I make sure I bring it up at the end. Pretty fun little email. I will search for it to make sure I have it. But let's dive into Game Boy. I'm all over the place today. Okay. That's okay. Mine's all over the
place. Life. A lot of life.
I know. It's just like, yeah. Okay. Game Boy memories, man. So for me, Game Boy was, I've talked about this before, I experienced a lot of the library on the Super Game Boy, because I had a Super NES. And so you got it going.
You can't see it.
No, it's okay. And you were like, yeah. and you could go into the little editor and change the color palettes and all this stuff, and it was so much fun. You could like draw on it, had like a little drawing thing, you know. I think then it like went away. But the actual Game Boy itself, I talked about this when I talked about NES, like playing with my aunts, because she had like all the accessories, the little light, you know, a handful of games. Anytime we would do like a lot of like the big family vacations in the 90s, where it's like you and like the extended family, we would go up to like Michigan and, you know, some of these places not too far from Ohio, like West Virginia and stuff like that. And yeah, big long car rides, playing Game Boy on the go. So that was kind of my experience with it. And then obviously I got the Game Boy Color, which is still my original Game Boy Color. I have the purple, which is why when the GameCube came out, I was like, I gotta get purple, because it's like my Game Boy. And I'm in that crowd. Anytime I buy like a retro handheld or any of this stuff, I'm always going purple. That's why this room's purple,
because of the Game Boy.
Pretty much that and the Super Nintendo. I'm a big into the, I actually had a Hyperkin makes a Super Nintendo color palette keyboard I had for a long time that it broke and I got rid of it. But yeah,
I only like playing Game Boy on Game Boy.
Really?
I'm not a fan of playing it on the Super Nintendo. I think it's cool that they have it. Emulation, I'm not a fan of it. I like holding it in my hand. I like playing it. It's the whole reason Switch is cool, because you can run around with it if you want to. Not that I recommend that. You shouldn't run around with your Switch. But I do like the form factor, and I love holding it, and I think it's part of the, I mean, it's meant to go.
So now that you also have the analog pocket, which I do. By the way, I've said a million times, still waiting. Whatever.
It's never coming.
It's a joke, dude.
It is a joke.
They even were like, hey, it's finished. We're going to release it in August. Whatever. I'm over it.
Of what year?
I don't know.
2026?
This year it was supposed to be. But anyway, analog. You do have the analog pocket. So do you find you like that more?
I do.
Yeah.
It just adds that backlit, which I think the biggest downfall, but the biggest gripe I have with the OG Game Boy is that there's no backlight.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be in a lit room. You have to see the screen. I do like that. The fact that the other one, it just has that a little extra, and I do like it. And they have those the tons of knockoffs. Right. Doesn't do it justice.
Right. I mean, I have, it's up there, but I have the Miu Mini, which I also have in purple, by the way. I should have brought it over. But, you know, and I also have the Retroid Pocket.
Yeah.
I have like the three, which is also in purple, by the way, just saying. But I do find that I really do, when I'm playing Game Boy games, I do want this, that vertical format for it. And one of the things I like about playing through RetroArch is you can do all the different shaders and all of the different, you know, customization of all the color palettes and everything. You can switch between all the color palettes at once. And so that is kind of cool. I actually find that the one I like, and eventually maybe someday I will go find one, I really actually like the color palette, and I don't know why, of like the Game Boy, not the Game Boy Pocket, but the Game Boy Light. Is that what it's called? The Game Boy, where it's still the original Game Boy. It's not Game Boy Color. Not the Micro. I think it's the Game Boy. It's not the Game Boy Light. Why am I blanking? There's Game Boy Pocket, and then what was the other Game Boy? Of the...
You sure it's not the Micro?
No.
It's like
Micro,
a horizontal?
Micro is the only Game Boy Advance.
No.
Am I blanking on it?
No. There was a Game Boy Micro, and it played OG DMG. No.
So there in Japan, there is the Game Boy Light, which was the final revision of. So it's like the Pocket. So it's a thinner, smaller version, but it has a light, like a front lit light on it. And for whatever reason, that's what I really like going with that color palette. And that's like one of the ones where like you see, like, sometimes you see like the blue, where it's like the blue light or whatever. People mod it to be all that stuff. And I love all the Game Boy mods that people do online, like the actual front lit mods and everything. They're insane.
Very cool. Very cool. You know why I didn't see that one? It's because I don't live in Japan.
Yeah, here, let me, here we go. Hold on 1 second here. Let me share my screen here. I'll share this Reddit screen. Game Boy Light. And yeah, it's got like a blue or something front light to it. Okay.
I think I've seen that.
Yeah, so it's,
I always thought that was like a mod though.
No, so there was an original one from Nintendo, and then a lot of people do that. But yeah, so it only came out in Japan, so it did not come out in America apparently.
Wow.
And man, I really find that I like that blue, playing on that blue, like whatever. Like it's just, I don't know. I just love it.
That's rad. If only they made that here, that would have been amazing.
Right. Well,
but how much battery does that kind of suck?
I think that's 3 AAAs or 3 AAs.
I imagine that reduces the play time.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, because looking at the back of it, it does look slightly bigger. But okay, yeah. I mean, when did you get it? Because you're a little older than me. You got it when it came out? What was that like? What was going on?
I didn't have it.
The Game Boy.
When I live vicariously through my cousins because they both got it, and I would just take it and I would play it, and they had the little the charger battery pack, and I remember just sitting with headphones like this. They were Sony's. You plug them in and I would just play for hours. I would just borrow it and just blast through their games. I didn't actually own it. I was one of the, like, I think I was one of the 5 kids in the country that didn't own one.
Wow. Yeah, I am a little more nostalgic, I will say, for the Game Boy Color, probably. That's like when I really kind of got into it. And then the Game Boy Advance I freaking love. And we can definitely do a full episode on Game Boy Advance. And we saw DS, 3DS, Wii, you know, all of them, where we got a lot to talk about. But I would say that for me is when I really got into it. But I have gone back through emulation and, man, played a lot of Game Boy games and even watching some videos and things like that of other people who have, you know, done reviews and everything. There's just something about it, like that green screen, you know, that monochromatic. It's like the CRT thing, right?
It was way above a Tiger Electronic.
Way above.
But it was like, it's similar.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, it is almost, I mean, for as big and bricky as this thing is, there is still just something like, it's just kind of like the perfect, it's actually almost better that it's this big.
Yeah.
Like the D-pad still feels solid. Start perfect. Select right there. A and B buttons.
It's a perfect form factor.
You get that nice little ding sound, you know, when you turn it on. It's just so cool.
Yeah, I always wanted one. My cousins, they missed out, I feel like, because I just took theirs, and I would just play it for months and months and months, and they just stopped caring. So,
yeah,
thanks to my cousins.
Okay, well, hey, let's dive into some games. I will start first because I think. You kind of said some of the games you were picking. Normally we tell each other what we're doing beforehand, but I think I have a game that I think you're following up with the sequel. Is that correct? Okay,
that's correct.
That is correct. Okay, well, perfect. I'm gonna start with, I think, probably outside of Tetris, which, great movie, by the way.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, it was great.
It was awesome.
I was not expecting that.
For those listening and watching, definitely check out, it's on Apple. It's on Apple, right?
It's an Apple movie. I can never remember the actor's name, but it's the guy from the Kingsman movies.
That's right.
And I got it and I was like, okay, well, I want to watch. I got Apple because, like, I want to watch this Tetris movie. And then I watched it and I was just not what I was expecting. And it's more of like almost like a spy thriller.
Right.
It's
very dramatized, obviously.
But it's really cool. And I watched some interviews where they were talking about it and they're like, you know, yeah, some of the stuff's like, definitely like didn't happen, but they said a lot of it did, and so that was kind of interesting. And I'm also like a history major, so like it's fall of Soviet Russia, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And but anyway, they talk about that, the game I'm going to talk about, which is, they said, oh, Nintendo was planning on,
they were
gonna
put this, that's right,
Super Mario Land into the Game Boy. I think probably would have still sold well, but yeah, Tetris probably was the better option because everyone wanted to play it.
Right.
But let's talk about Super Mario Land, the first one. And I still go back to this game quite often. There's still just something about it that is, it's so different. It's so like basic compared to every other Mario game in existence. It is quite different. I mean, you do still get the fire power up, but then you have like stages where it's like a horizontal shooter, and just definitely a very like inventive, creative time with Mario, where they're like, let's try some stuff and see what happens.
And my understanding is that Miyamoto didn't really have a lot of hands-on with this game. He was more focused on two at the time.
Yeah.
And they just kind of made a Mario IP with it. It was probably one of the most unique Mario games ever. Just, it was very weird, but it's still very fun. I do get tripped up with the bombs.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you jump on a turtle shell and it like turns into a bomb, that always frustrated me. But man, what a good game.
Yeah, control wise, I say this might be the, you know, because Mario games are like peak controls.
Yeah,
I would say. I mean, like every, you know, you do have some moments where like you're a little floaty, especially mm-hmm. like even like Super Mario 3 and I would say Super Mario World. But like you get it almost immediately, like how like it's not pixel perfect, like with Mario, like you kind of slide a little bit, like there is some momentum when you're running, which is perfect. And then you pick it up. If I had to say the worst controlling Mario game, I would probably say Super Mario Land. Not that it's really bad at all. Like, it's still a very, but just compared to every other Mario game in existence, I would probably say this one, because the controlling is a little different. You're like a little more floaty, and just that I think the nature of the Game Boy and this game being like the launch game for the Game Boy, you know, very early development and everything. There are some like times where you're like, how did I just like hit boxes? Collision is kind of weird and stuff like that. But other than that,
very
ambitious game for the Game Boy. I mean, obviously, you know, you look at where you're at the beginning and then you look at where the end, you're like, wow, this game's like archaic compared to some games that came out like 1997. Right. But I think it still holds up well. For whatever reason, it is not on the Switch Online service. Yeah.
How do you just jump into two? Like, why would they even do that?
I don't know. But yeah, we'll talk about Super Mario. So yeah, some thoughts on Super Mario. And then of course, it's actually I think my favorite Mario song.
Sing it.
The Super Mario Land?
Yeah, I forget.
Music.
Isn't it like
Oh yeah, it's great. Yeah. Barbaruto Kingdom or whatever the heck it's called.
Yep. It is I remember the Egyptian level.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was very like historical Egyptian.
It was like an Easter Island level.
Yeah. I do remember, what is it? There's a submarine level. So I forget, do they even have like a true water level where you go underwater as Mario outside of a ship?
Oh god, it's been a long time since I played.
I don't think there is, but you're in the ship.
You have 12. Yeah, there's 12 levels. And wow. You still, and then you rescue, by the way, not Princess Peach.
Oh,
Princess Daisy.
This is Daisy.
This is it.
Yeah,
it's crazy to see where some of like the Mario lore comes from. You're like,
what? I know people get tripped up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic game. Definitely. I always felt like 2 was, it felt like a Mario game on the Game Boy. And it was, I always felt
we can go into it. Okay. Cause that, by the way, is your game. I think
it is.
We kind of said that's what we're doing. Yeah. Yeah. We said that's what we're doing.
Mario Land 2, 6 golden coins, I think is very revolutionary for the time. They got rid of Bowser. I don't think one had Bowser. I forget.
No.
It had someone else, right?
Yeah, one's kind of, it's just its own thing.
2, they still didn't go into Bowser, and they introduced Wario, and I think is one of the coolest additions to the Nintendo brand itself. He was just like a very mysterious character, and all the bosses and the worlds were very authentic to that game. New power-ups like that carrot, where I just floated around as a little rabbit throughout the game. I don't pick anything else. I just kind of stick with the carrot power up, and I just float around because I think it's just better control. But man, you could definitely feel like it's Miyamoto, and he had his hand in that.
Oh, for sure. It's a very different. I mean, like it shows just how different Land 1 is compared to like the rest of the series. when you play, because Super Mario Land 2, you're like, oh, this feels like right at home.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually interesting because I let my nephew, when he was like 5 at the time, and he's like diehard to Mario. He beat Super Mario Odyssey when he was like 4. Well, I mean, so I don't know if that's saying it, but it's just like, I don't know. Maybe he's like 6 and I am, but it's like he's around that age at the time. And I had my little Mio Mini on me, and I was like, hey, here, check this game out. And it was Super Mario Land 2, of course, and he's never heard of it or whatever. But for him, it just felt like Super Mario World. And I would say, I think that's the thing, is that this feels much more like Super Mario World on Game Boy, like a Game Boy version of that.
Yep. Very interesting characters. I had witches, giant turtle, if I remember. Let me just look at the cover. But yeah, I just blown away with that game. I always thought just seeing Wario like an evil Mario, holy hell, like that's such a cool concept. And I think they delivered with this game.
Oh, I agree. And it is on the Switch Online service.
Yeah.
And I don't think there is an official DX version of that? Or is that just, I know some people have done like a ROM hack or something, maybe where they've gone in and colorized it. Cause like Link's Awakening, for example, which is one of the games I was considering talking about, like it did get a DX version when the game, so there's like a Game Boy Color version of Link's
Awakening. Yeah.
Deluxe. I don't know if Super Mario World actually has that, or if that's just like some sort of ROM hack or something, but you can YouTube it. And I think some people have done like a ROM hack for it where they've gone in and colored it, and it's like even more cool.
Oh, wow. I gotta check that out.
Yeah. Cause it looks awesome.
Yeah.
And I think, go ahead.
I think it's a perfect game.
Oh, I agree. And I want to see here, I should bring this up, because the Super Game Boy, by the way, if you are into collecting, Super Mario Land 2, I don't think it does. So if you're playing on the Super Nintendo, some games have a special border.
No, this one's just the Game Boy. I have it up right now.
Probably because it didn't come out. Probably because that came out in 1992. Game Boy, whenever the Super Game Boy came out, probably like 94, if I had to take a guess.
Right.
But some games that are Game Boy games, if you play them on the Super Game Boy, they'll have like a custom border.
Yep.
Around them, which is pretty cool.
They did that for Pokemon, right?
Yep. Yes, they did. Yeah. Well, spoiler alert, we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But yeah, so Pokemon has it. I know Link's Awakening. So I think it's only the original Link's Awakening that has it, not Link's Awakening DX, which is like the Game Boy Color version. Yep. So it's like, okay, if you want the custom border, but I had this website saved. I was trying to pull it up here where somebody broke down every single one that has it. I know there's like a Donkey Kong one that does, and it is pretty cool. And a lot of emulation, you can get those borders, like some of the Game Boy emulators and stuff like that. They do have that where you can get like the custom borders, so like, which is kind of cool. And I think that was a really cool idea. So they're like obviously embedded in the Game Boy cartridge itself. It's not like a Super Game Boy thing. It's like the Game Boy game says, hey, if you're playing this on a Super Game Boy, you can get this little custom border.
Very cool.
Which is pretty cool.
I think the Super Game Boy is very cool, and I should have played it more because I didn't have the Game Boy. So wouldn't that be more of a reason to own a Super Game Boy? And I just never convinced my parents enough to get me one.
I know. Well, maybe that's how I should play Pokemon, is I should go back and I should play Super Game Boy on a CRT TV.
That's right.
And really just get like
the get
the full scan lines, the whole deal. Well, okay. Well, speaking of which, let's dive into Pokemon, because I guess I'll talk about it. So I was going to do Pokemon Yellow, which is why I'm wearing my Pikachu shirt. But I think I'm just going to talk about Pokemon Blue, because I also happen to have it. So there we go. We'll talk about Pokemon Blue. But I think you can really talk about all three of the games.
Right. What's your favorite? Oh, you're muted.
Sorry. Jeez, all over the place. I'm going to just edit it. Who's my favorite what?
What is your favorite Pokemon out of those three? Because I know there's a difference.
out of those three, I would say that blue is the one I go to the most, because I had blue first and then I got yellow, which of course is the cool thing about yellow is that it is altered a little bit where it's more like the anime. Mm-hmm. Like you actually fight Jesse and James rather than just like random team Rocket members. And there's a few other changes as well. Yellow is by far the easiest of the three. Red and blue are pretty much the same. And they, in a way, actually do have a difficulty rating depending on which Pokemon you pick as your starter. So if you pick like Bulbasaur is the easiest to play through because your first gym is a rock gym and then your second gym is a water gym. So it's pretty easy to plow through those two. You know, if you pick Charmander, okay, well, rock a little bit harder, then you go to fire. So I would say that is kind of like if you have a difficulty, but after that, it doesn't really matter. But I mean, this game or red, blue, green, you know, if you're in Japan and then ultimately yellow, doesn't really matter. Insane what this game led to, what this game meant at the time. Like, this is basically the thing that killed off Pokemon cards for me. I was like, why do I need those? That was dumb. I could be a freaking billionaire right now if I'd kept all my Pokemon cards when I was a kid. You know, geez. But basically, it was like, why do I need cards when I have this? You know, and then, okay, it was good to go. But Pokemon was so huge when it came
out. That was the starting point.
Yeah.
Right? That was it. That it blew up after that.
Yeah, I think the game on Game Boy was the most impactful thing of Pokemon. Like the thing that, like, cards were huge, the anime came out, but I think if I had to really pick the thing, I would say the Game Boy game is the thing that really, like, okay, now we're talking.
Right. I never was into Pokemon.
Really?
Never. I it was in the Power Rangers land for me, where it was like, I'm too old for that. That is too kiddy.
Because what
year was that?
So it was like 96, 97.
Yeah. So I was just going into high school. I was playing Resident Evil 2. It was more about those gory games. That Pokemon, that's for kids. But it's one of those things about Nintendo that I missed out on, I think. And I picked it up during COVID. I'm like, I'm just going to jump right in. And I have all of them. I have yellow, I have red, I have blue. And I jumped in the blue. One of my friends sold me his copy, his childhood version. And I jumped in and still had his save in it. I created a new save. And then I played probably 20 hours in and the battery finally went.
Oh, man.
And I lost my file. So I didn't pick it up after that. But I had a great time for the 20 hours that I was into it. And I understood the appeal.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. This Gen 1 Pokemon is definitely, the version doesn't specifically matter, but I lean towards blue just because that's where I go. Is Gold and Silver better? Yes. Is Heart Gold, Soul Silver like the best Pokemon game ever? Yes. But Gen 1 is still what I go back to because I've just played it so much. I can always fire up Pokemon Blue. There's no scenario in which I'm never like, oh yeah, I can fire up Pokemon Blue and play it and be like content for.
Is
like,
that on Switch?
Chance. No chance. And that's a big thing people would.
Why wouldn't they do that?
There's no chance in hell they'll ever do that.
Why?
Because it's money.
I know, but they're not putting it out. So how would people experience it?
Because then people wouldn't buy the Pokemon Legends ZA that comes out this week. The new.
Okay. But
yeah, you know what's crazy? And I don't know if we've talked about this before on the podcast, but I looked up something. I looked up like the financials of Pokemon. It's utterly insane. It is the largest intellectual property. Like, it has made more money than any other intellectual property ever. And it's only been around since like 1996, 1997. There's a graph somewhere. Let me see if I can pull this up. But it's like, when you're talking about, it's like Hello Kitty's like number two at like 89 billion, you know, like the MCU's up there, Star Wars, Pokemon's number one at like $180 billion. Like, it's
more than Mickey Mouse. Like,
oh yeah. Not even.
Wow. Close. Like, crazy.
Yeah. So like, obviously Mickey Mouse is tied to Disney, which is part of that. But yeah, Pokemon makes like $1 billion a year just in cards. Like number two and three is like Magic and Yu-Gi-Oh, and they're like 200-300 million. Like it's utterly insane how much money Pokemon make. Like Pokemon is more valuable to Nintendo than Mario.
Right.
Just crazy. It is insane.
That is that is insane.
Like
when I was in college, I did a breakdown of like Mario compared to Mickey Mouse, and Mario is more well known than Mickey Mouse in the world.
Oh,
Pokemon probably just blows that away.
Oh yeah, I believe it. Yeah, okay. Now I'm pulling up a Wikipedia, so maybe the thing I looked at a while ago wasn't accurate. So according to this, Mickey Mouse, so this Wikipedia right now has Mickey Mouse and Friends, and this might just be media. This is highest grossing media franchises, so maybe it's a little different. So Star Wars 46 billion, Mickey Mouse and Friends 61 billion, Pokemon 113 billion. And Mickey Mouse has been around since 1928.
That's right.
And Pokemon has been around since 1996.
That's insane.
That's insane.
That is honestly insane.
Like, and it's about to make another probably $1 billion.
Right.
Yeah. And it's going to sell a ton of Switch 2s. And
I have friends that collect heavily into the cards, friends and family, actually. And I can't believe how expensive the boxes are. And I can't believe how valuable some of the cards are that they pull out.
That's wild.
Like $1,000.
I got into it a little bit earlier this year because I was wasn't thinking about like the card market, you know, that exists and everything. I was like, oh, I saw they came out with like 151 cards.
Right.
You know, and I haven't touched Pokemon cards in years. I was like, oh, I'll buy some Pokemon cards because, oh, it's like 151. I kind of wasn't into Pokemon like after Gold and Silver until X and Y. So that stretch of like Sapphire, Diamond.
That's 3DS?
X and Y was 3DS. But I'm talking about it's really like the Game Boy DS era was when I was kind of out of Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And then I got back into it with 3DS and X and Y, which I also loved. Fantastic. But like Black and White 2, Diamond, Platinum, Pearl, I didn't really play those. I did play the remakes of them, the Ruby, Sapphire, Diamond. But when they originally came out, I wasn't into them as much. And so anyway, so I saw that the 151 cards were coming out. And I was like, oh, sweet, I'll go buy some. And I'm like, man, these are kind of expensive. And then I started looking into the markets and everything and all this stuff. And I was like, okay. And so because I just bought a pack. I was like, I'll just buy a pack and see what happens. And I opened it up and I got like the second highest valuable Blastoise card, which is sweet because I love Blastoise. I always pick Squirtle. And so I was like, oh, this is awesome. So then I went to Reddit and I was like, hey, I just pulled this card. And everyone's like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, so I was like, okay. So then I kind of got into it for a little bit. And
it's one of those things that people jumped into during COVID.
Oh,
yeah. I'm very much a Star Wars fan. I collect this. I go very deep on the cards.
Oh, I see that. Yeah. And you like get them graded and stuff.
Yeah. And prior to COVID, like probably right around 2020 when it just started happening, you could buy a box for like $100. Now they're averaging $300 to $400 a box, which is kind of a huge markup. But of course, you apply that to every card. Cards and games just kind of blew up during COVID. It's kind of bananas.
Yeah, it's insane. You know, I'm sorry. I'm looking for that email. I cannot find it. Somebody sent us an email asking a question. It's okay. I know the question he's asking, but I'll feel bad for the person when we get to it. But So anyway, let's talk a little bit more about the game. There's just so much to it. The missing number glitch. Right. I mean, I did everything. I was trying to find Mew, everything you could possibly imagine. I remember when, like, who do you use the Master Ball on? Right. Like the first time I played it, I don't know. I use it on like Articuno or something. It's like, oh, this is sick. You know, I can use it. And then later, you got to save it from Mewtwo. But then if you use the Master Ball on Mewtwo, does it ruin the experience? Like the point is to have that epic battle.
I have no idea what you're saying. I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's ridiculous. I mean, these are like long standing characters. I mean, you know who Mewtwo is.
I know who Mewtwo is. I know Mew. I remember getting the fish. And he was like one of the most useless. I forget his name.
Magikarp.
And he evolves into like a Leviathan. Right. Sure. I remember leveling him up and he turned into like that Leviathan thing. And I'm like, damn, that's pretty badass. But I understand with Yellow, you get Pikachu as like a companion no matter what, right?
Yes. So yeah, in Red, so in Yellow is different, and in Crystal might be the same. I know it's like the third version, and then there's Emerald. I don't know about those because I haven't played them. But yeah, Red and Yellow, you just get Pikachu. And Pikachu also walks behind you, which was an upgrade. Right. And they did. There's a lot of quality of life upgrades in Yellow. Like Charizard can fly, where Charizard cannot learn fly in Red and Blue, even though he is a flying type. Mm-hmm. Gen 1 is also like if you're getting to like the actual like gameplay mechanics of it, is completely broken. And so it allows you to do like just some absolutely bonkers stuff with Pokemon, because it, like some of it is like, you know, the types, right? So you have like fire and water and all those things, right? But in Gen 1, like a lot of types didn't exist, and a lot of things, like now, like Jigglypuff is a fairy type. Well, fairy type didn't even exist. So it's like normal type, like psychic was just ridiculously overpowered in Gen 1 because there was really only one counter to it, which was Ghastly and Haunter, who are ghost type,
right?
And so other, yeah, so you're just you know, you're kind of in that weird phase where there's just, there was only 151 Pokemon, and so you're, you know, you're kind of tied to who you're using. So
the thing that's funny about Pokemon too is that a lot of people don't know what an RPG is. They have, right, no idea. But then they like Pokemon and they love the Pokemon games. It's like, you like RPGs then, because it's an RPG.
I've always joked as like, you know, people talk about like Suikoden, like, oh man, you have like all these characters, like Chrono Cross, or like you have 40 characters, right? It's like Pokemon is an RPG where you get 151 characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everything means something, like you're leveling them up. I hated that Red character, the kid that rival.
Right. Yeah. Well,
ugh.
In Pokemon like lore, right? Yeah. Like Red is the, like, I guess, like official version, because Red is a character you can fight in Gold and Silver. So when you beat Gold and Silver, you go to the like the top of this mountain and you get a challenge Red, who is like the game in-game version of like Ash, essentially.
Right.
In Yellow, it is actually Ash, but you know, it's whatever. And anyway, he's like ridiculously powerful, and he has like a 99 level Pikachu and a Charizard, and you know, all these things. And so essentially you're fighting the character you would have been in that.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. If you do want to play it though, there's actually a lot of people just go back and they play Fire Red and Leaf Green on the Game Boy Advance, which are like, you know, it's a Game Boy Advance version. You can like run, there's a lot of advancements and things like that. Both are great.
The little I played, I really enjoyed. So I it's on my list. I definitely have to get back into it. I do want to finish it.
Yeah, I could talk forever about Pokemon Blue, so I will let it go. I found the email, by the way. Found the guy's question, so we can have that at the end. There we go. So, all right. Let's dive into your game.
Okay. I think I stole this from you.
That's okay.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Fall of the Foot Clan. We all loved, well, I don't know about all, but a lot of people did love the original Ninja Turtles, minus the water level where you had to defuse the bombs. But the handheld Game Boy version I thought was very fun. Going back and playing it now, it's kind of slow and clunky, but when you wanted to play Ninja Turtles, a little side scroller, it hit the spot. It was very fun. It had all the enemies. And it felt more like a Ninja Turtle game, more so than the NES version, not including the arcade versions. But it was just a very fun game. And the Fall of the Foot Clan, like, way to suck kids in to a title like that. It's like, whoa, this is going to be epic. And it was epic for the Game Boy.
Yeah, there's three games. Yep. There's three. I have played it a little bit because I bought the Cowabunga collection.
Yep.
Which for the Switch, which is great, by the way, because you get like, mm-hmm, Hyper Sun Heist and Turtles in Time and all those, and you get those Game Boy games. And yeah, I've played them because I've done lists and stuff like that. And going back, I do think it's kind of like we talked about last time when we talked about the NES, the Turtles games, like how they do get like progressively better. Mm-hmm. So I think this is the first one. And
yeah,
then yeah, like the third one's like pretty advanced. I think the third one you can do like Michelangelo and you can do like a helicopter thing.
Yep. Yeah, very, very they definitely get better. I pick one because I have the most nostalgia for it.
Sure.
Nostalgia always wins, regardless of how good it is. But it was just a great bash.
Yeah. I mean, I have some gameplay pulled up on the side here. I mean, you know, it's one of the things about the Turtles, like it went back then, especially like for video games. And I think why they worked so well, because, and this is just something I was thinking about too, when I was thinking about Game Boy games, just that we're going to be talking about and stuff like that. They're like the NES, the colors are like so much better to where you're not using your imagination as much. Whereas like you do, there is this element of like using your imagination a little bit.
Right.
Like with the Game Boy, that is kind of cool because it's like this green on green screen,
yeah,
you know, and it's pretty cool. And I, you know, like the Turtles, I mean, like even looking at some gameplay here, it's like in games, they work so well because like the levels are so easy to design because it's mostly like brick walls, you know, it's like, yeah, it's like these sewer walls, but it, you know, like the city in the background, even just looking at some gameplay stuff in here, it's just so, it's like so cool. I mean, it feels like, at the time, it definitely feels like the real deal.
I've done some development with the NES. Like I taught a class at New England Tech for it. And you don't understand how limited the NES is with color. Like you can only use three colors and you're just using hues and different variations of the same color over and over again. You might not notice it when you're playing NES games, but you're right. When you play the Game Boy, there's like maybe five shades of gray throughout the whole game. Or any of those games, like you're very limited in what you can do. And they did it. They captured the atmosphere of sewers and New York and all the atmosphere, you know?
Yeah, it's so cool too. I mean, the other thing about the Game Boy is like, this is when Nintendo really began their journey of like, you know, hey, let's use established hardware that we can sell like at an affordable rate. You're right, you know, compared to like some of the other things, whereas like the Game Gear, I mean, look at what you're doing, is that, you know, you're pushing pixels and at the time, and but it also ate like four batteries, which was like, you know, it was crazy, right? Yeah. Compared like at the time, the Atari Lynx, you know, it's like, man, it's like, yeah, it's certainly more advanced, but it's you lose out on the battery life. And so like that's really where Nintendo's whole thing started, even though this does take four, you know, batteries.
Yep.
But you know, you think about that, and it's just really interesting because it's for a long time until the Switch, essentially, when Nintendo was, they were kind of split into two, where it's like, okay, you have like your at home console, and then you have whatever the handheld is, essentially like a handheld version of the previous generation.
Yep.
Which is kind of what the Game Boy was. It was kind of like, hey, a handheld NES, because the NES came out in 85. This came out in what, like 88, 89, you know? So yeah. I mean, a lot of those games translated well in the Game Boy Color, and the Game Boy Advance was definitely like a portable Super Nintendo, it felt like.
Yeah, it was. I did own the Game Boy Advance, and it was definitely that, it was scratching that itch that I always had of not owning a Game Boy.
Yeah. And the Game Boy Advance, we can definitely do an episode on it. You can do Game Boy games, all of that stuff. Awesome. Okay, well, I'll go to my last game here. Now, this one is kind of a hidden gem, kind of a rare.
I don't know what this is.
You don't. Oh, you'll remember as soon as I talk about it. And that is a game called Mercenary Force, which, if you look at the cover, it looks like a fireman. It's like this, like face, you know,
fireman.
Right. Yeah, kind of awkward. But this is one of these games where, randomly, it was like one of those things in like elementary school or whatever, your buddy's like, hey, can I borrow games, like what do you got, you know? And so I borrowed it from a buddy and played it, and it's so cool. It's really unique. It's a very short game, but it's like they call it like a third person shooter, but it's really like a horizontal shooter where you're in Japan and you have this force of mercenaries, I guess, is quite literally what you're doing.
Mercenary Force.
Right. And it's kind of cool because you build this team and you can kind of like, you have, there's a little customization in how you beat them, and you move basically from left to right, and you, each one of them can do like different things. You got like a ninja, and you got like this magic person, you got like, you know, somebody that shoots fire and all this stuff, but they kind of shoot in different directions. So you know, like throw ninja stars and stuff like that. So you kind of build, and like a monk. And so you build your team like how you want, and you just move through these levels. And it's just kind of cool because, and like, you can rearrange the order that they're in, like the positioning that they're in. And there's like obstacles. So it's like top down, but you're like essentially going through like streets, you know, as opposed to something like, I don't know, R-Type or whatever, where you're just flying around in spaceships and stuff. So like, for people who are fans of like horizontal shooters and you want to try something different, it is kind of, does kind of scratch that itch a little bit. And total like random, it's just one of these games like I happened to play growing up. Otherwise I would never even know this, you know, game existed ever, because I've never,
for the most,
I've literally never heard anybody else like ever talk about it. And even trying to search stuff, I don't even think there's a Wikipedia article for it. So, you know, yeah, it's just like, it's like so obscure that it's only like the handful of people who played it. But it is, it is, it's pretty cool and it's pretty fun. And I think it also just shows like, because the Game Boy is so successful, like, you know, you want to say like shovelware, like the Wii obviously saw a ton of that because it was so successful. The Switch certainly has that issue, but it also allowed developers to probably like thrive a little bit, because so there's so many systems out there that it's like, all right, well, hey, we can throw this out there and see what happens.
Yep. It is a unique game. I too thought it was a Fireman game or some kind of firefighting game based on the cover.
Yeah, here, I got it pulled up here. I'll I had to say, there we go. Yeah, I mean, there's the cover for it. Straight up looks like a fireman. Yeah, straight up looks like a fireman. Just on the
cover. The fire department and you're a mercenary force.
And you're here to put out fires.
That's right. With ninjas and mages and whatever else. It was definitely an interesting game. I think you're right. It is an experimental type game because there weren't a lot of games like that. I don't know if it's like puzzle. It's action adventure. It's shooter.
I mean, it's like a weird. I mean, game. I ultimately kind of think of it as like a shmup.
Yeah,
which is really kind of, but it's just like, because you're not like in a spaceship, right? Like, but I mean, the way it plays is totally like that. Yeah, then you can do like some magic attacks where you turn into like this big, you know, and it's very like Japanese and like, you know, so like Japanese gods and all this stuff. So you turn into like this one Japanese god and you like run around, you know, blow a bunch of stuff up on the screen. I think the entire game can be beat in like 28 minutes. Like, I think it's like incredibly short. It is also incredibly difficult. It is like a brutal difficulty.
I can't believe a game like that was ported because that is a very niche, weird kind of game.
Yeah,
I think they might have jazzed it up a little bit to make it look like Fireman to get kids to buy it.
Oh, like the cover art? Yeah, 100%. Yeah. That's, they're probably like 100% what it is.
Kids like Fireman. Let's just do that. Definitely unique.
Yeah, who's even the company? Meldac? Like, I've never even heard of that developer.
No idea.
Meldac. Japanese.
Made one game.
They might have. What else? Let's see. What else did they make? Anything we've heard of? They made, so they're like, they went out of business. I don't think they're in business. Oh, well, then they got bought out and some other things. Wow. Very weird company, but, let's see, they made Zombie Nation on the NES. That's probably their most, that's probably their most other known game.
I vaguely know what that is. I don't think I know what that is.
They have a Super Nintendo game. It's called Super Pinball Behind the Mask.
Okay. Sure.
And like, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. Zombie Nation, I would say, it's probably, that was probably their most known game. Yeah.
I don't think we could describe it. You should definitely check it out.
Yeah.
If you haven't experienced this game, it's unique.
For those of you watching on YouTube, I'll have gameplay footage of it.
It's up there with Quirk.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're like, oh, you know, you're a collector and you want something kind of different. Yeah. It's up. You're like, oh, this is kind of an interesting. And I have no idea what they go for. I can pull that up, but probably not much. I had to take a guess. Or maybe a bunch. I don't know. eBay. Let's see. This could be a new segment. Is it expensive or cheap?
Are we talking loose or complete in box?
What does it say loose? Because complete in box loose is always.
Probably like $10.
I don't know. I my guess is because it's so obscure. Maybe a lot wasn't printed. Let's see. Mercenary Force, complete in box, $109. Which, given get video game prices right now, isn't actually like the worst thing in the world. Clean, around $30.
Wow.
Just card only.
I did not see that.
Yeah.
But again, who knows anymore?
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. What's your last game?
My last game is right here, pointing to the screen, right in the middle. Metroid 2, The Return of Samus. If you played Super Mario, if you played Super Metroid, you were like, when did this happen? Because the game tees it up. It picks up right where Samus 2 ends. The baby Metroid gets attached to Samus, and you're like, when the hell did that happen? That didn't happen in the last game. This is 2. 2 kind of carried on, and a lot of the things that we love about Metroid kind of stuck in that game, like Spring Ball, Morph Ball, not Morph Ball, but like getting attached to the environment. Just a lot of very cool things that the first game didn't do. I think I even had a map, which was essential for that game. One of the things that the NES version did not have. And we talk about atmosphere. That game has an atmosphere to it that the other games have. And they did it on the Game Boy. It is a creepy game. The music is very strange. But man, it is very, very well done. It's such a great game. It's one of my favorite games on the Game Boy.
This is one of those games where, because like this is one of those things where part of the whole emulation stuff that's going on now, like there is a lot of cool stuff you can do. And I talked about like the color palettes earlier and things like that, where it's like, man, I don't know. I think maybe this is a game that really is maybe best experienced, maybe not through emulation, but certainly on like something like the Analog Pocket, where you get that OLED, because this game, it's like mostly just a, you know, if you're playing here, you're not getting the black, like creepy background.
Yep.
As opposed. And then I don't know, you know, some games, a lot of games, if you play them on the Game Boy Color, it like forces a color version onto you, right? Like Pokemon is like that. I mean, obviously, because it's like, it's a Game Boy game, but if you play it on the Game Boy Color, it's in color, because the Game Boy Color will do that. And some, you know, so that is one of the things about the Game Boy, is like, there's all these different color palettes and things you can play and experience it in tons of different ways. But man, maybe the best way is playing like in the Game Boy Color or whatever, or I don't know, where you can play it and get that true black. And you play this, because it's like really eerie and creepy.
It is. It's just a very strange game. And if that's what you're going for, they remade this game on the 3DS. If people remember, I don't think it's as good as the original. They definitely made some weird improvements. Like that's, I don't know if you played the 3DS version, but there's a lot of things that get
like physical parry or something.
Yeah.
Right.
They carried that on in Dread, and I'm not overly in love with it, but it definitely adds another layer to a very, I don't want to say simple game, but you're just running and shooting the whole time. It is a hard game too. Metroid 2 is a challenging game.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you play it, have you played it recently, like on your Analog Pocket or?
Probably a couple years ago.
Yeah. So just thinking that might be the way to go.
Yeah, I gotta jump back.
True in. Black and the OLED, that could be. Yeah. That's one of those games that like might benefit from some of those modern the modern palettes and stuff. Okay, well, some closing thoughts here, and then we'll dive into our question just about some other Game Boy games. Man, some honorable mentions. We'll have to come back. We have to come back and talk about Link's Awakening. I mean, that's a big one for me.
Beautiful game.
I traded my PS2. My brother and I both got one when the PS2 came out, and a lot of launch PS2s had this like disc read error thing. It was like a pretty common thing, and so what happened was a lot of them I'd have to go in and like clean the lens, and it was just like a lens like burnout thing on a lot of launch PS2s. So that happened to my PS2, and I took it apart, and I accidentally snapped the ribbon cable, because like a ribbon cable is attached to the top of it where the power button and eject button are. And I had no idea how to fix it. I was like, oh, it's like screwed. I'm like screwed. And anyway, so I traded it to a kid in high school for his, which I still have, Game Boy Advance, which is now like my, you know, is my Game Boy Advance. I have a pink Game Boy Advance and a copy of Link's Awakening. So I got like high school and played through it, loved it. So yeah, we're gonna have to come back and talk about that.
Absolutely. I have Quirk. Do you remember Video Power? Did you watch Video Power?
What was Video Power?
Video Power was on TV after school, and it was one of the coolest games, not a game show. Well, I think this one did have a game show aspect to it.
Johnny Arcade.
And I think in the first season, he had like a team cartoon called the Power Team. And Quirk was one of the characters on it. It was basically their version of Captain N.
It had
Bigfoot as a character. It had one of the dudes from Arch Rivals in it. It was such a weird show, but Quirk was one of the characters, and everyone's like, who the hell is Quirk? Quirk is from Game Boy, and this is like a maze type game. Very fun. And previously I had talked about Gargoyle's Quest, and I have another honorable mention. I didn't want to talk about it this time because I talked about it last time, but
that's fine. Yeah,
Gargoyle's Quest, absolutely amazing. The sequel's on the NES. That's the first one. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely want to talk about like Skate or Die. Definitely yeah. Played a ton of that on there. I'm looking at this Video Power. It looks like it came out in 1990. So no, it's just a little young. I do
so
remember.
Good.
I thought you were talking about, because I do remember Nickelodeon had some sort of like.
Yeah,
I remember Nickelodeon had some show where they like brought kids on. You had to like beat levels in a certain amount of time and stuff like that, and that was kind of cool. And it was like an arcade, but you're playing like Sonic and stuff. And I thought it was the coolest thing.
Video Arcade is what that was called.
Video Arcade. Okay, this is Video Power. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, so this is maybe a little earlier version of that. So
yeah, they're on YouTube. Check out some of the episodes.
Okay. All right, so we did get a question. This is from Paul, who says, "Hi, hey, big fan of the show." He suggests a full episode, but I don't know that I could do a full episode on this because I don't know. He says, "For an episode suggestion, what about some difficult challenges from gaming? One I never attempted was the easy codes in Kingdom Hearts 3, but once I managed to beat it, it was all, you know, the bonus levels and DC. One I managed to beat was all the DLC levels in Astrobot. Could be fun to discuss some of the harder ones in gamings and, you know, just and what people have beaten throughout the year. So what's like a hard gaming challenge? The first one that immediately comes to my mind, and one that I'm never doing ever again. I don't care about platinum points, trophies, nothing. The first one that immediately came to my mind is the freaking Final Fantasy X Thunder Planes, dodge 200 bolts of lightning consecutively. Never doing it ever again, ever.
I did it.
Yeah, brutal.
It was painful.
It is painful. Brutal.
Yes. Man, that's a great question. I don't know. I almost feel like a lot of people will do it on TikTok. They'll just run through some challenges.
Yeah.
Like a no hit.
Right.
You know, no hit runs. I can't even get my head around that. That would just drive me bananas. I saw someone doing a no hit Mario 2. I'm like, oh,
it's insane.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
That's torture.
I got back into Zelda 1 a couple years ago, and I looked up speedrunning to see what people were doing, and I was like, oh, and so I learned a few like speedrunning like techniques, and I thought that was kind of cool. Like in Zelda 1, the way that it's like when you go from essentially map to map, like if you can do this thing where you kind of like go back and forward and like launch you to the other side of the map, and so you can like jump areas and stuff like that. I thought that was kind of cool. I did actually a run through Pokemon where I have it recorded, and I've literally been sitting on a hard drive for like 3 years because I didn't really know how I wanted to like edit it to like make it sound cool narratively and whatever. And I tried to beat Pokemon only using tackle to see how far I could get. And one of the problems is one of the gyms you get to is a ghost gym essentially, and ghost type cannot be hit by any normal attack, so you can't even get past it. But that if you, even if you just like use a special attack and get past it just to see how far you could go. And I did make it all the way to the Elite Four, but it was impossible to beat the Elite Four only using tackle and only using one Pokemon. So I did do like a challenge like that, but some other just general like challenges that are in games, like super hard bosses and stuff. Trying to think of some that are just brutal.
The only like, thing that springs to mind,
Emerald Weapon, Final Fantasy VII.
I did it. That was on my last playthrough. I did that.
Yeah, that one was pretty brutal as a kid.
The only other thing I could think of in more recent games is in Destiny when you're doing a raid. I think the first raid was with Atheon, the Vault of Glass.
Oh, dude, I love the Vault of Glass.
And people, if you were so underleveled, Atheon was like impossible. Yeah. So we ended up trying to cheese him by throwing the grenades with the warlock so he'd fall off the map. And I remember staying up until like 3 a.m. trying to get one of my friends with the warlock to grenade him off. And finally we did it, and I got the Vex Mythoclast, and he lost his mind. He's like, I just spent like the last 5 hours trying to do
this. We may have to do a Destiny 1 episode. So like, we should. That's actually what we should do next, is we should just do a Destiny 1 remembrance, because God, it was like the perfect game. It was
Love to just fire it up and just play through the Vault of Glass on my PS4.
It's the best. It's still to this day, it is the best raid I've ever played in any
top 10 game ever. For me all time.
Oh yeah. Destiny one, if I could go back and like I had like a solid group of people and everything. And
hey, if you have it on PS4, I would say let's do it.
I do.
I still have my character on PS4. So we got
two. Have a PS5. I can throw Destiny one in, can I? And we can it's still up. The servers are still up.
Yeah, you could definitely do it. If you log in, there's still people in the tower just
emoting. We may have to do it. God, yeah. I mean, I don't know if Vault of Glass is in Destiny 2, because I thought they brought some of
it is, but not a fan.
I don't know. Maybe I should boot up Destiny 2. It's been a while, and just see what's going on.
Yeah.
You know. Okay. Well, yeah. So we'll figure out something to talk about next time when we come back. Might be Destiny. I don't know. We'll have to see. But by that time, I don't know. Holidays are coming up and stuff like that. Metroid's coming out. There's a lot of cool games.
Ooh.
There's a lot of cool games.
Still no 2 or 3. I'm surprised Nintendo didn't drop Prime 2 and 3.
The remaster of that,
I think
Metroid, everyone's waiting on Metroid Prime so much that they're like, we can't drop another remaster.
But why would they go through the trouble of releasing 1 and not 2 and 3?
Oh, I think we will get 2 and 3. I think we'll get them after Metroid Prime 4. Yeah, I think it was just like if they had released like 2 Metroid Prime 2 remaster and stuff like that, one, especially when like Switch 2 was coming out and everyone's like, because they need that like holiday system seller. So
we need it too.
We do. We definitely need. Yeah, we definitely need this. So. Okay. Well, cool. All right. Well, hey, where can people find you on the internet?
YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Age of Retro. Check out my stuff.
There we go. You can find me anywhere on the internet at Super Games Bros. Guys, as always, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.